Hello, and welcome to Solstice Stories, a podcast showcasing specially commissioned stories about Cornish heroines of witchery and myth. These stories were performed from the stage, balcony, and backstage hidey holes of Cornwall's most magical venue, the Minnack Theatre, on the winter solstice 2022. And they have now been recorded so you can enjoy them from the comfort of your cosy home. I'm Rebecca Morden, and in this episode, long-term scary little girl Shaz Andrew will be reading Dog Whistle by L.H. Travail.
We don't win. It's important for you to know that, and I mean really know it. Get comfortable. I don't know who is going to be telling you my story, how far into the future or even into the past it might travel, through the air or in the wires or on the waves. I hope we will have rebuilt enough for that to happen. I don't know what you're expecting or how much may have changed by the time it reaches you. We are still learning to tell our stories different, how best to roll credits. We told things the old way for a long time, even after the divide. We named the battles. Peace was what happened when nothing important was going on. We are now 77 years into the Great Peace of Arion. 77 years isn't a very long time at all, but it is long enough for many new people to be born, and for some of us to die, and for only a very few who carry the memory of war in their bones and sinews to remain alive. I'm not one of them. I'm not young, but I'm not old neither. My grandparents were children of the Divide. Their parents and grandparents failed the last peace and didn't live long after. None of us lived so long as before, but my parents and I were born here in the forest, and I have not known war. It was late summer for us here when the wolves returned. Late summer in the turning of the seasons and late summer in our peace too. The air was hot and ominously still, not yet shattered into a storm. Elliot saw the first one from the lookout and came shinnying down from the branches to share the news. It was out past the two rivers, he said, far away but unmistakable. He had never seen one in the flesh, but knew the stories and was sure that was what he had seen. Like us, but not like us, he said. Bigger, paler, hunchy. One of those wolves. Douse the fires, instructed Della. It could be that they were just passing by and haven't seen us. I don't want to move camp unless we have to. We've got it good here, this close to the rivers. You want us to hide? Elliot was incredulous. Della's little dog Pineco whined and scratched nervously at the leaves on the ground. No, replied Della quietly, giving Pinecone a quick scritch of reassurance. I want us to seek. Elka? Angie? Elka and Angie, our silent trackers, were already strapping on their softest boots. Della nodded her thanks. This isn't the first time, Elliot. We've been here before and we'll be here again. Marek, will you carry word of this to the other camps? Tell them whatever we find we will share. Marek's nose wrinkled. We share too much with them. Information, food, tools, teachings. Our resources are limited. I do not want to use my time on them. You are indeed a late summer child, Marek. Della was unfazed. But your time is your own, to use in service of what you will. I thank you for your honesty. Marek nodded. And it was here that I decided to speak up. I'll go. This would be my first trip as a carrier to other camps. I had been training and preparing, but never yet felt the impulse to take on a run. But here it was, sure enough, just as they said it would be. I felt sure in myself, excited, and a little scared. Would my offer be accepted? Excellent, Della beamed. Come to the smokehouse when Elka and Angie return. We can talk while we work. Elliot and Marek rolled their eyes at each other. They tended to egg each other on, I think. They were always pushing and poking at Ella and her decisions, but they worked hard. And when it came down to it, they had always come through for us so far. They weren't happy at the timing of my impulse, though. After the meeting, they both cornered me at the feed prep while I was shelling beans with Maria. Why would you risk a run now with wolves around, just to take a message to other camps? Marek was in a belligerent mood. If there is danger, they will find out soon enough for themselves, and we could lose a good runner. What is there for us?
Where do you think these beans come from? Asked Maria, coldly. She is the oldest of us and saves her patience for those who she thinks deserves it.
We grow those here, Elliot snapped. I planted them myself, from beans we grew and dried last year and those from the year before. They are our beans.
Maria shook her head. But where did our first beans come from? When we were new and hungry and escaping the war. They came from deer camp, and the potatoes came from Mayfly camp, and the tools came from Badger camp. We weren't born then, any of us, and you came into this with the plots already dug and planted many years over. And it is not as if you aren't told. You listened to the stories as children, you played the games. You are the last generation to have seen the scars, and you are there every year when we roll credits, but you are lazy, you two.
Elliot frowned. I'm not lazy, I've never missed a watch or a planting, and I'm here to shell beans with you now. Not good enough.
Marie would not let this one rest.
Tending to the land and the food and the watch is one thing. Tending to what lies underneath, all that is harder work. I don't know if you have the strength for it. I don't know if any of us do.
Elliot was about to come back at her again, but Marek put a big, solid hand on his shoulder and picked up a bundle of beans, sat beside Maria and started shelling quietly. I like Marek. He is grumpy, but he thinks about things. Elliot, I'm not so sure, but he sat too and shelled beans.
It rained a little and we were grateful for the woven canopy protecting us. Maria's parents designed the pattern of it, which is why she puts herself on feed duty so often. The canopy has been rewoven again and again, but the pattern is still the same. She likes to remember them.
Shortly after the rain stopped, the trackers, Elka and Angie, returned to camp. I followed them to the smokehouse to hear what news I was to carry. It was not good. Three wolves had been seen, almost certainly a raiding party, and well inside the forest. Actually, I think Elka said our forest.
Della looked thoughtful as she unloaded a bundle of particularly fine wood into the smokehouse's storage hopper. Elka and Angie also added what they had collected on their return to camp. We all pitch in gathering the very best wood for the smoker whenever we're outside the camp at this time of year. That way, the very best of all of us is carried in the smoke that preserves our food for the winter.
I think, Della shook out the waxed canvas of the wood carrier, that calling them wolves back then was probably a mistake. I suspect that they take pride in the idea of the snarling and the biting, without considering how a wolf actually lives. They are far more like the dogs they keep chained and angry, following the whistle of their masters. She looked at Pinecone, who was gleefully rolling in the dust and the muck shaken out of the canvas. But perhaps no one would know to be wary of them had they been given that name.
I would, said Angie.
Sometimes when we roll credits, Elka tells the story that starts with Angie getting attacked when she was little by one of those dogs that had got loose and run off into the forest. She was rescued by her mum, but was scared of dogs ever since, even Pinecone.
We should attack them first. Elka was firm. We have the advantage. There are more of us than there are of them, and they won't have the chance to report back. We can make sure they just disappear in the forest.
No. Della's voice rang with certainty. That is a path we chose long ago, never to travel again. Another voice cut in from the doorway. Elliot had followed me. Weren't we always taught that change in our minds is a sign of strength? Maybe these wolves have been on the right path all this time.
I did not like the way his voice sounded. There was a mocking edge to it and a strange vibration just out of hearing. Della didn't seem to like it either, but Elka and Angie were listening intently. Della allowed her voice to soften.
We will hear you out on this, Elliot.
We will fight the problem, not each other. She turned to me. In the meantime, carry the news that they have been seen to deer and mayfly camps. They will send their runners to the others, and they will know what to do.
I left Della Elliot, Elka and Angie in the smokehouse collected my pack and headed into the forest. I know the way to Deer Camp well. I've travelled the route many times. The forest is not a safe place, but knowing it allows us to move safely within it. We know what to look out for and where to avoid. There aren't any dangerous animals or anything like that. They were all wiped out here long ago. It's more the sheer amount of junk everywhere. Huge, rusting and overgrown. War things and mining things and fallen comms towers. Half buried and all too easy to trip on or to trust you with your weight for a moment and sink into as they crumble. Their jagged edges will shred you as you fall. Ugly wounds that turn poisonous and corrupt. Especially in this heat. There used to be medicines for curing stuff like that. At the time these junk things were made, that was normal. A lot of things were normal before the divide that sound like a fairy tale today. Huge pipes of clean water. Great halls of food and toys and machines that let people talk to each other all across the world. Beautiful things. But the people back then let them all go. They had it real good. Better than we do, even so close to the two rivers. But when they came to the late summer in their peace, they fought themselves instead of their problems. At least, that's how it was told to us. Maybe it was told to you different? Deer Camp is not far, but they still welcomed me with a brew and a warm hello, as though I had traversed the spaces between stars. They're like that there. They're big huggers, too. For a moment, at their fire, it felt like the danger was a long way away. They're good at that. They make a real nice place to talk about difficult things. They heard me out seriously and warmly and summoned their runners to carry the messages on. Then more hugging and pressing food into my hands to take with me. And on I went to Mayfly. Mayfly Camp is much smaller than Deer Camp. They build everything very light and you just know they can move in a moment's notice. They have a tension about them, always aware of how fragile things really are. Sometimes I think I might like to join Mayfly for a bit. They seem to get a lot done. I shared my road food with them and they were grateful. They have more runners than Deer Camp. I knew the message would carry fast from there. I was on my way home again, job done, stopping to fill my canteen from the stream near one of the fresh springs, when I saw the wolf. He was on his own, back to me, one soft hand resting on the trunk of a large tree. He was dressed not to be seen, but I could see him, sure enough. He was tall, sort of lumpy, and the skin at the back of his neck was bone pale. He was close enough to spring at me if he saw me, and he was pissing in the stream. All the tiny hairs on my body stood endwise. I felt the urge to jump and run, yowling into the undergrowth, or to launch him quickly and bring him to the ground. I probably could, but I held my breath. We are trained very well to assess a situation quickly and quietly and not to take rash action. The water running into my canteen was yellowed now, though, and I felt the rage consume me. This disgusting creature pissing in our forest. I blinked. Noticing my blinking, letting the rage crystallize into a fuel that I could use to see clearly, and I saw that wolf was wounded. He finished pissing, gingerly shook himself dry, tucked, and then leaned heavily against the tree. He took a long, uneven breath. One side of his clothing was dark with blood, all down his leg, a lot of blood. The fabric was torn at the outer thigh. Inside the tear, some bandaging and wadding. The wound was cared for, but blood was still soaking through. The forest had got him. That much was certain. That was a wound from falling into something up to your waist. I've seen that before. Climbing a hillock, trusting your weight to it, and it gives way. Rusting brittle metal, and you are wedged in the grip of an old vehicle, legs dangling, or crunching on the bones of bodies entombed inside. Maybe he dragged himself out or maybe others helped. Either way, he was patched up now, but useless to them. That's the way they think anyway. Waiting to die or for his party to return. I mean, it could be both eventually with that wound. He had a weapon, but he had taken his eye off it and left it propped against a rock.
It was closer to him than to me, but he was wrapped in his moment of private pain and my knees were already bent to spring. I let them do their work. A wild leap, a grab, a scuffle of leaves, and the weapon was mine.
The wolf yelped with fear and surprise, pitching sideways so he was half fallen, his bloodied leg out at a stiff angle, his smooth-skinned face tense with agony and shock. He remained very still, looking at me. Downed, yes, but a cornered beast is most dangerous.
I was not pointing the weapon at him. I know how to use it, of course, we all do. We learn how all their weapons work. Guns like this, as well as weapons of the mind. We mustn't get sloppy like before the divide. To know their weapons is to know how they think. To know how they think is to choose to think different. One corner of his mouth curled upward a little.
They often assume we don't know how to use their weapons. They assume that because we choose peace, we are weak. These are the stories they are told and tell in turn. With practiced ease, my hands moved on the gun, springs and levers very fast, until the ground around me was speckled gold with unfired bullets, the gun empty. Without taking my eyes from the wolf, I crouched and pushed the gun firmly into the bottom of the stream, right down into the mucky bed, squidging and poking silt and grit into all the open parts. That was that dealt with for now. Disarmed doesn't mean safe, though. The energy between us was still crackling with the potential for immediate violence. That's something to feel for carefully, and it's very difficult to handle because it's unpredictable. Any time you get to this point, something has gone wrong somewhere further back and you missed it, or you've caught each other by surprise. It happens. I could have told him, I'm not going to hurt him, but that can always end up a lie, now or further down the line.
I'm not going to hurt you, said the wolf.
Thank you, I replied simply and quietly. The water in the stream was running clear once more. I dipped my canteen, rinsed it, filled it and offered it to the wolf. He looked at it, then at the stream, his jaw tense. It's got piss in it. I shook my head. That's gone further down now. This stream joins the river that flows through your city, though.
Yeah, well, a little bit of piddle at this end isn't going to make much difference to that big river.
Maybe not.
I moved to stand. Where do you think you're going?
Back to my camp.
No, I don't think so. The wolf's voice hardened. We're supposed to clear out any camps we find.
You haven't found a camp.
Maybe not, but I found you and you're going to show me where yours is.
I put the canteen of clean water down, slowly, comfortably within his reach. Okay. I gestured towards home. It's about half a mile that way. You'll be welcome, you know. Tomorrow is a big ceremony, where we roll credits. We build a big cook fire and speak about all the people who've helped to keep us safe. Maybe one of them will be you.
Fuck off, spluttered the wolf, laughing.
I shrugged. Up to you. The wolf looked at me like I was rotten bread. Why would you give your friends up so easily? I know I lost composure a bit then. Honestly, I didn't expect him to know the word friends. I didn't think they had friends. I stood up. I'm not giving anyone up. I'm on my way back from passing the word to other camps that you're here, Deer Camp and Mayfly Camp, and they will pass the word to others. In a couple of hours, there will be no trace of any of them until danger has passed. Only our camp will remain. I felt such pride at our planning. And we will welcome you. And why would you do that? The wolf's eyes narrowed. All the better to poison us or something, I suppose. No, my brother. I delivered the lines faithfully and clearly. Because we were you once upon a time. We walked away from war 3 generations ago. Instead of tearing down those who lived in this woodland trying to warn us, we were welcomed here ourselves. We are Wolf Camp. I had spoken in service of peace. The wolf's face contorted with fury. Filthy deserters! With surprising speed, he pushed himself away from the tree and launched himself at me. I backed away, but his momentum barreled us both onto the ground, his hands gripping my leg, holding me fast. This was not how it was supposed to go. In the stories, if we speak in service of peace, then they join us.
That is how the founders of Wolf Camp turned away from the war. They were running, and they were welcomed into peace. But perhaps it is different if you aren't running yet.
The wolf gripping my leg was not running. He was hunting.
I think of the story Elka tells about Angie getting attacked by that dog and saved by her mum, and how her mum brought the dog back to camp and kept it because the dog had a shitty life. And it wasn't the dog's fault. It was how it was trained. And the dog had a better life at the camp with our dogs. And Pinecone is that dog's great-great-grandchild. It's a good story. But we still have to be careful around that old dog. I remember when I was small and not to be alone with it. And Angie still won't go near any of them.
The ground beneath me was damp and so much cooler than this stifling summer air. A million things wriggled in it, living their lives where mine might now end. Stuck isn't the same as over, though, as we all know well enough. In this moment of victory, the wolf let out only a dull groan of pain at disturbing his wound, which was now bleeding freshly. He had me, for sure, but he seemed to be the worse for it. I thought I could probably kick him in the face with the other leg, or could maybe even grab a rock or something. I could hurt him at least. But for a moment I lay still, keeping my breathing measured, my features calm. Don't get me wrong, my heart was hammering wild, and adrenaline was roaring through me, just like we were told to expect. I was afraid and furious, and keeping still wasn't easy. He looked back, braced for a fight. I did not give him one. He would probably win. He was much stronger than me, but clearly so miserably ill-equipped to deal with the world we were both born into. I waited, alert to any opportunity to break free and escape. He took a ragged breath. I'm not paid enough for this. I watched his features sinking. More struggle means more pain for him, even with a deserter for a prize. His hands loosened on my leg. I still didn't move, not wanting to give him an excuse to ramp it up again. He looked so tired. They were always tired, we were told, underneath it all. I saw it happen in his face. The moment when he gave up, when he realized it wasn't worth it, that it wasn't like it was supposed to be in his stories either, and he let me go. I quickly and awkwardly wriggled away, brushing damp and wormy dirt from my trousers, made sure I was far enough away from reach to leg it if he got a second wind. I'm not stupid. I didn't tell him he was brave to let me go, that he was strong not to fight, that he was smart to choose something else. I don't think he would have heard it if I said it straight up. Them and us, both trained to listen, but they were taught to bark loudly when faced with something they don't understand. And just like us, they pass on their training. And I don't even know if the words are enough now, anyway. I was ready to kick his teeth in, and I don't feel any braver for not doing it. If I had thought I had a better chance of coming out on top, maybe I'd have gone for it. I didn't feel strong or smart. I was just alive and free. All I felt was bloody creeped out at a near miss. And grateful. I'm not sure what of. Not the wolf, that's for sure. Maybe a bit. He did back down, but I don't know if that was a choice exactly, or a fault in his training. I thought of Elka's story about Angie. The end of that story is about the winter when Pinecone got sick, and Angie dragged scavenged meat from way deep in the icy forest so he could have good fresh food and get better. Angie couldn't hardly go within a meter of Pinecone and still can't, but she saved his life that year. Elka loves Angie very much and is so proud of her. That's the story she tells when we roll credits, and now it is part of mine too. I said quietly to the wolf, "You know where we are." He didn't look at me. I got to my feet and walked slowly away. I was calm and steady, as I have worked hard to become, but by the time I got back to camp, I was shaking. Marek was the first to meet me. He'd been watching the route for my return. He took me silently to Della via the kettle on the fire for a sweet, warm brew to hold while I debriefed. After I told, Della hugged me fierce and long, and when I was done shivering for a bit, she rubbed my arms hard, brushing the experience from me alone into the space we all share. We prepared the camp well, to roll credits the next day. We always do every year. It's important. We tidied everywhere and hung garlands of scented herbs. We prepared the feast and decanted the best spirits and brews. We gathered the books of stories and the lists of names of all who contributed to the peace. We set the cook fire and the big tables, but this time we laid places for guests. They didn't come. I checked the area around the stream much later. There was no trace. No wolf, no gun, no water canteen either. He took it, I suppose, but I don't know whether that was out of entitlement or whether he set any store by the gesture. We had no guests for the ceremony, but we had no trouble neither. We didn't see wolves again in our part of the forest for years, and by the time we did, things had changed again for all of us. Whatever happened to him, it looks like he never told the others we were here, or if he did, they chose to leave us alone. I told this story at the ceremony and at many others since, and at ceremonies in other camps, and it was all written down to pass on to those who come after me. And when we roll credits, we read out the names. We remember the wolf who pissed in the stream. I didn't think to ask his name. "Why include him in the credits?" asked Elliot. "It's not like he actually did anything." Elliot would be trouble for us later down the line, but that story is not mine to tell. "Piss in the stream flows all the way down to the river," said Maria, her deft bony hands already halfway through next year's canopy for the feed prep. "But then, so does the clean water." So this is the end of the story I tell you. A story where nothing happened, and we were all the better for that. The heat gave way to a beautiful crackling show of a storm, and to cooling rain on the beans and potatoes and all the other crops. Deer Camp and Mayfly Camp and all the others returned, and life carried on as normal for a time, a little easier perhaps as the years went on, and we continued to build together. We don't win. It's important for you to know that, and I mean really know it, because there's something other than winning. Late summer leads to harvest, when the peace is tended well.
Dog Whistle by Al H. Travail was read by Shaz Andrew, edited by Colin Lego and Michael Hall, and the music was by Kia Svarvat. Solstice Stories is presented by me, Rebecca Morden, and is a Scary Little Girls production, supported by Feast and the People's Postcode Lottery. Look out for our next episode of Solstice Stories, Maven Cherry of Zenna by Anna Mansell, wherever you get your podcasts.